Matthew 12, 1 through 8. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priest. Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priest in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." The word of the Lord.
Please pray with me. Lord, we do thank you for your word, and we pray that you help us now as we study it. Help us to understand it. Help us to love what you teach, and give us the power to live it out. Amen. Well, we're continuing here our series, Undivided. And we've been talking about the fragmented lives that Christians today are in our culture, this particular culture. I don't mean the United States in general. I mean particularly where we are kind of in the buckle of the Bible Belt at this time. We've been talking about the kind of the fragmented approach to life that many of us find ourselves pulled toward or pushed toward. And we've been talking about how to resist that, and how to move in the direction of the kingdom and a less fragmented way of approaching. We've looked at several things: money, time. And today what we want to look at is work and rest, a less fragmented way of approaching that. We all know that we need rest. Everybody knows that. But some of us dislike rest. Some of us resist it. And most of us need more of it. Right? That's what the studies show. I think I said a few weeks ago that someone's nodding their head. Yes, that's true. You might hear us read an article or something like that, and they'll reference some great saint who would wake up at, 4 in the morning and pray for an hour. He's like, wow, amazing, And they went to bed at like 6 o'clock at night because there were no lights. So probably if you went to bed at 6 o'clock, you get 10 hours of sleep, you wake up at 4 a.m. too, right? There was a different rhythm to things of work and rest, and we just find ourselves in a different life, in a different rhythm with different stressors and so on. But it's the same scripture and it's the same teaching, and so we want to apply that to our time that we live in. And so one kind of opening caveat, the teaching passage for today is the Matthew 12 passage, the gospel passage, where Jesus declares himself the Lord of the Sabbath. And we're going to look at what that means. But one kind of general caveat before we get into it is there are several, we'll call them standing arguments among Christians on the topic of the Sabbath. For example, was the Sabbath established in Genesis, in creation? Or was it later established only in Exodus? There's a standing argument about that among Christians. We're not going to get into that. There's another argument. Does the Sabbath, the Old Testament Sabbath, with its set of regulations and so on pertaining to how you think about work and so on, does that apply in whole or part to New Testament Christians? There's a standing argument about that. And we're not going to get into that one either. And the reason why we're not going to get into either one of those two things is, as I've often found, as I've tried to dig to the bottom of many of these standing arguments, is that they agree on so much. And the average person, if you don't spend 1,000 hours studying the controversy, you'll think that they're just these polar opposites. And on particular, specific, narrow questions, of course they are. There's a yes or a no. And so in that sense, they're arrayed against each other. But on those examples that I just gave a second ago, the reason we're not going to get into them today is because all sides of both of those questions, they all agree that God is the Lord of work and rest. And they all agree that rest is an important thing. And they all agree that rest is not just an important thing, it's a God-commanded thing. And they all agree that what you do with your rest can honor God or not honor God. They all agree on that. So we're not going to get into the specifics of who's right or who's wrong on that. That's just a kind of a generalized caveat about what to expect as we get into this. Instead, what we're going to do is examine three things in the Matthew passage. First, why we need rest, or why we need Sabbath rest. Jesus calls himself the Lord of the Sabbath. We're going to look at that. Why we need Sabbath rest, why it's difficult to obtain, and then how to enjoy it. Why we need it, why it's difficult, how to get it. Before we dig into each one of those points, there is this passage in particular. We need to understand the kind of the setting for it, because this is one of those passages. There are some of these like these. There are some of these passages in Scripture where if you don't understand the background for it, the what takes place and who says what to whom doesn't make a lot of sense, and it seems a little weird. And this is one of those passages. And so that we got to kind of set the stage here to understand where the Sabbath stuff is coming from. Okay, so look at that with me there, Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. When you read in the Gospels and somebody says Jesus did something on the Sabbath, you need to hear the movie music go dun-dun-dun. It always is setting up a conflict, things that happen on the Sabbath. It sets up conflict. And so right away at the very beginning here of chapter 12, verse 1, Matthew is setting up this conflict. His disciples, Jesus' disciples, were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain. Luke tells us in his account that they also rolled them between their fingers to get the husks off of the grain. We don't have that here, but we can assume that they did that as well. They plucked the heads of grain, they rolled it between their fingers, and they ate. They did three things. And then the Pharisees, you know, they're always lurking, Pharisees. They're always around, you know. They had this little spy network, you know, and they see things. And so they're here, and they say to Jesus, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. What is it that they did? They plucked the grain, they rolled it between their fingers to get the husks off, and then they ate it. What that means is this: they reaped, they threshed, and they grind it between their teeth. They ground. Where in the Old Testament is reaping, threshing, and grinding prohibited? Nowhere. And Matthew's original audience would have immediately understood that. Would immediately understood that what's happened here is that the disciples have done those three things. They have reaped, threshed, and grinded. And that none of those three things are prohibited in the Old Testament. And yet, in verse 2, the Pharisees say, look, what your disciples are doing is on the Sabbath is not lawful. Here's what they're saying. The command, the Sabbath command, you find it in two places in the Old Testament. One is in Exodus chapter 20, and another is in Deuteronomy chapter 5. And both of them just say, don't work on the Sabbath. Keep it holy. And they actually each give a reason why you shouldn't do it after that as well. And they give different reasons, and we'll explain those later. But the extent, for the most part, of the Old Testament teaching when it comes to the Ten Commandments is don't work on the Sabbath. Well, what is work? Not to fear. The Pharisees enter the breach with a set of rabbinical commentaries and regulations that are collectively called the halakha. It's a set of regulations that applies to people who are in this cultural context. And so when they say they're doing something that's not lawful on the Sabbath, everybody knows, and Matthew's original audience would know, that what the Pharisees are referring to is not the Old Testament as such, but the halakhic regulations that dealt with the Old Testament. And guess what was prohibited in the 39 categories of prohibited work in the halakha? Reaping, threshing, grinding. You with me? Okay, so it takes a while to explain that background. Matthew's audience would have immediately gotten that. So that's the background. So the Pharisees are getting after Jesus because Jesus' guys are violating the halakha. And Jesus, he says later, he's the Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus, the inventor of the Sabbath, the authority over the Sabbath, is being lectured to by the Pharisees for Jesus' guys violating the Pharisees' own rules about the Sabbath. That's the setup. So, what do they say? They're breaking the rules. And then Jesus gives these different examples. Verse 3, he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? What is it that they did?" Verse 4, how he entered the house of God and he ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for him to eat and for those who are with him, but only for the priests. And he's referencing there an occurrence. And if you have a footnote Bible, you can follow the footnote. And you can read that place in the Old Testament where that happens. And the deal there was this special bread that was set out first in the tabernacle and later in the temple. And it sat there for a week. And then at the end of that week, it would be switched out for some new bread, and the priests would be able to take the old bread home and eat it. And it was special bread. It was a holy thing, right? And David, who was starving as he was fleeing from Saul, goes to eat the bread, and his guys do too, so that they don't die. And that's not prescribed. David is not upbraided or anything like that in the Old Testament. So Jesus gives an example from the Old Testament itself that forbade a particular practice. That was in Leviticus. You can't eat this bread. That's Leviticus. And he gives an example where it actually happens, and nobody gets in trouble for it. What Jesus is setting up is sometimes, even if you actually forget the halakha, if you actually get into the Old Testament, sometimes there are things that are more important than the rule itself. In that case, David's preservation of life trumped the rule. Does that make sense? So that's what Jesus says, "Have you not read? Have you not read?" And so he gives that example, and he goes and gives another example about how he says the priests profane the Sabbath. Whoa. What is that about? Verse 5. That's where the priests work on the Sabbath. They work on Saturday. And they're given a kind of an exemption for it because, well, somebody's got to do it, right? And so Jesus is setting up these examples in the Old Testament about the Sabbath understanding, and a couple of examples are about where people were doing something that was against the rules, and still they were not upbraided for it because there was a higher authority. There was a competition in rules, and one trumped the other one. Okay, that's the setup. So, one thing I want you to notice as we go here to our first point, why we need Sabbath rest, is that neither Jesus nor the disciples nor the Pharisees are arguing about whether Sabbath is a real thing. No one disputes that. Nobody's saying, Jesus doesn't respond back, that's the New Testament now, there's no such thing as rest anymore, nobody needs a Sabbath, it's all good. This is a dispute about who has the authority over work and rest, and who has the authority to make claims about what is honoring to God in that time. But nobody is disputing that you need Sabbath rest, so let's look at that now. Why do we need Sabbath rest? The Sabbath, or the idea that one time a week, at least one time a week, you're going to set aside some time. We think about it as a 24-hour time. Really, it was for them probably a 36-hour time because it was sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Sundown Friday, sundown Saturday, that's 24 hours. But nobody's picking up their tools and going to work when it's dark on Saturday night. They're going to bed. And they wake up on Sunday morning, 36 hours, and they do what they need to do. You with me? So it was just kind of set aside time in a week and where they didn't do their normal labors. Why? Why was that principle in the Old Testament? For two reasons. Two reasons. One, we need physical rest and we need spiritual rest. Physical rest and spiritual rest. First, the physical rest. That part is somewhat obvious, although this is the part that I don't like. This is the part, I've often wondered, why did God set it up so that you had to be unconscious a third of the day? I mean, think of all the good things you could do if you got that other time back. If you never had to sleep or rest, or if you just could just go, If you could just do all this, and think of all the books you could read, all the languages you could learn, all the suffering you could alleviate, all the people you could help. You could at least multiply it by a third, right, from what you're currently doing. Probably more, because you wouldn't have to take a break and go to take a nap. But God set it up in such a way that it's not possible. In fact, if you don't sleep for long enough, you will die. I read a book a couple of years ago by a professor of medicine at Yale or Stanford named Meir Kriegmeier, who the whole book is called The Mystery of Sleep. And the beginning of the book, he says, why is it, this guy is the expert on sleep, okay? He says, why is it that every living thing that we know of, all animals, all plants, every living thing that we know of requires rest or sleep, or it will die? And then he goes on through the book and explains, he kind of displays his learning, you know, in the book and tells you all these cool things, how to avoid jet lag if you're flying from here to there and, you know, all that stuff. And the book concludes, or that beginning part of the book concludes, why is it that everything that is living requires rest or sleep? And Dr. Kriegmeier says, we don't know. And as I read that, you know, I thought, this is one of those things, that kind of deep architecture of creation. God set it up in such a way that things are finite. And we recognize that in terms of our mortality. We feel that when we become ill. But I would also submit that finitude, that we're bumping up against limits that we have. You see that, and God designed that for you to for that to happen to you every day of your, you know? And so you're feeling your finitude. And so the purpose of Sabbath rest is first physical, and that's kind of obvious. But if you're like me, you don't like that. Why? Some people, they're fine with that, and that's okay. But some people, they don't like that. Why is that? I think it's because what's happening is we don't like the fact that we're finite. And we've seen this crop up in other areas as we looked at the Sermon on the Mount. We've seen this in some other areas where, for example, we want to be able to solve all of our problems. We want to be able to know what's going to happen tomorrow. And the anxiety and worry that we feel about the meeting or about the event or whatever it is, it's in part because we know how things should go. We're not sure God's going to get it right. And if he would just consult us and all of our wisdom and knowledge, then things would probably go okay. Which is another one of those areas where we're pushing, we don't like our own limits. We have a limit on our knowledge, what we can know. We also here, we have a limit on what we can do. And it's a built-in 24-hour cycle of a limit. And also here with this idea of a weekly rhythm, it's a built-in rhythm. And the thing is that your body is going to make you sleep at some point. But you can go for a much longer time not taking a break from work. And that's what we're talking about here, this weekly idea of a rest or a Sabbath. And so the first reason why we need that is this kind of physical dynamic. The other one, though, is a spiritual rest. We need the Sabbath because it does something for us spiritually. And I'm going to camp on this for just a second because this is the one that most Western Christians are inclined to reflexively deny or believe is kind of weird and not make a lot of sense. And that's because the way we're wired, we tend to not believe that what you do with your body impacts your soul. So, for example, when Jesus talks about fasting and he assumes that his disciples will be fasting, to us, most people have never fasted. I remember when I went to a doctor's appointment a couple of years ago, and I had to get my cholesterol checked, and I called ahead of time and make the appointment, you know, and you got to make the appointment in the morning. That way you can go eat your breakfast, you know, and you don't want to skew the results. And I said that to the person. Oh, she said, well, we have an 11 o'clock. We've got a 10:45. And I was like, well, you got anything earlier? I'd like to come in for the appointment and then go have my breakfast so I can have fasting test. And she said, oh, sir, we don't do that anymore. And I said, why not? She said, it's dangerous. And I thought, wow, it's dangerous to skip breakfast. You know, I was like, man, tell that to Jesus. And tell that to most people in the world. We have limits. We have limits. And Sabbath rest pushes against those. And one of the main limits, or one of the main reasons why we have to have those limits pushed back against, is the spiritual dynamic. When you fast, It's doing something to you physically that has spiritual impact on you. Most Western Christians think that the way that you grow as a Christian is you just learn more. You just study more, you read more books. And believe me, I like to study more and learn more and read more books. But one of the things I've learned through that process is that we sit in a very weird place in the world today and in human history, in Christian history, where we shuck to the side that what you do with your body can impact your soul. Not your brain, your soul, your mind. For some people, when you don't get the kind of rest that you need, you make yourself more susceptible to sin. For some people, the most God-honoring thing that you can do when you go home is take a nap. Because what you're doing with your body impacts your soul. It impacts your ability to live in a way that honors God. And that's actually exactly what I told you earlier, there are two places in the Old Testament where the fourth commandment is given. Once is in Deuteronomy, and the other is in Exodus chapter 5. And Deuteronomy 5, Exodus 20. And then in Deuteronomy 5, it says, honor the Sabbath day, keep it holy, for it gives a reason. And that reason is different from the reason given earlier in Deuteronomy. And you need to know this because this is the critical point to understand why the Sabbath, why the idea, and by when I'm saying Sabbath, I'm just saying some kind of a weekly rest, and we're going to define that more later. Why that? Earlier in Exodus, it says, honor the Sabbath day, keep it holy, for on that day the Lord rested from his labors. And the idea is you need to do that because you're made in God's image. And even God, in a certain respect, rested. And so how much more you? And if you push back against that, if you fight against that, doesn't it show that you are pushing back against how you're even wired and created? That's the idea in the Exodus passage. But in Deuteronomy, it gives a different reason. Honor the Sabbath, keep it holy, for on that day you will remember that you were brought out of Egypt and you were slaves, but you are slaves no longer. The Deuteronomy passage links weekly rest to not being enslaved to your work. How are you going to know if you're just having to put in some extra hours and whatever the job it is, whether it's a job you get paid for or not a job you get paid for? How are you going to know if you're overdoing it, if you're overworking, versus if you have become enslaved to your work? One way to know is to ask whether you can take a break. Can you just stop for 24 hours, for 36 hours? Can you unplug? Can you not check your email? Can you turn your phone off? I know many professionals who, when I've talked with them about this, just as friends, they're like, that's impossible. There's no way I can do that. It's no way. I'd be checking my email at least every couple hours, all the time. And I've said to them what someone said to me once when I gave that same response. Graveyards are full of people who thought the world couldn't get along without them. How are you going to know if you are just having to put in some extra work versus you are enslaved to putting in extra work? And here's where it actually gets problematic, because most of us like the work that we're doing. The people that I know, including myself, who have at times been enslaved to their work, they like it. And this is where it gets a little weird, because most people, when you have this kind of a conversation with them, they say, yeah, but it's good work. Yeah, but I'm doing good. You remember I said we ought to have the Yeah But sermon series? The Yeah Buts? Yeah, but it's good work. Yeah, but I'm providing employment for all these people. Yeah, but I'm bringing justice to so-and-so. Yeah, but I really enjoy it. Yeah, but I'm learning so much about this. Yeah. And the answer that the scriptures give to those yeah buts is, right, good that your work is good. Are you enslaved to your work? Can you take a break? So the second reason why we need the Sabbath rest is it helps us know whether we're too plugged in to the work that we have been called to, and that there's such a thing as being too plugged in. So while many of us find rest difficult to obtain, for some of us, when we actually get it, we also find it difficult to enjoy. You know, I heard someone say, for like a married couple, are going to have your date, you know, have your date night, you know, and the idea, date night is defined as time where you get a babysitter and you go to your favorite restaurant to have that fight that's been building for 3 weeks. You finally get the rest and you can't enjoy it. So obtaining rest is difficult for some of us. Enjoying rest is difficult for some of us. Why is that? Why is that? This takes us to our second point. There's two basic sets of reasons. There's kind of some surface reasons that we'll look at briefly. I'll just give some examples. And then there's what I think is the deep reason that applies for most of us. Some surface reasons why rest is difficult to obtain. For us in our culture, it's the portability of work. That portability has increased exponentially. About every 10 years, maybe, I would say, or at least 15 years, it increases exponentially. Your ability and the convenience of taking your work with you wherever you go. Now, there are some benefits to that, because if you really have to get something done, and sometimes you really have to get something done, I got my computer, no problem. Or sometimes you can just do it on your phone. Got my phone, no problem. Just make it happen, and we'll get it done. So that's great. There's some genuine conveniences to that and some wonderful things that come by that. But there also start to be expectations. Expectations about how quickly you'll respond to people. Expectations about when you will be responding to people. I've been in situations where people try to outdo one another with the timestamp of their emails. And the timestamp on your email reflects how prodigious you are, how industrious you are, how much you care. People will say, and this is the best, if the next day somebody says, man, you were up at 5 a.m. sitting on, how are you doing? Well, it's important, you know, I was trying to get the job done. And, you know, so the portability of work is a significant reason why rest is difficult to obtain, not just because work is portable, but also because of its portability, people's expectations about your responsiveness have also changed. And we feel that, don't we? We feel those expectations have changed. And so it's difficult sometimes for us to get that kind of rest. There's another reason for us in our culture why rest is difficult to obtain. We've talked about this a couple weeks ago, so I'll be brief on this. And that is the impact of technology. Earlier I said the portability of work. And part of that's related to technology, but that's a separate point. The way that technology is advancing and how quickly and how it seeps into all these different areas of our lives, often to do wonderful stuff, great stuff. As we've said, there's nothing wrong with technology as such. But like every piece of technology, every app, every new device, they all give something and they all take something away. Let's do a test. How many of you know 10 phone numbers in your head right now? Raise your hand. 10 phone numbers. If I, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If I had asked that question 15 years ago, probably most of the hands in the room would go up. And that's because we have the wonderful device that will store for us all phone numbers we've ever come across. And they're at your fingertips. Wonderful. That's great. It gives us something. But it also takes something away. And that is your memory of the numbers. Your phone dies. It's out of battery. There's no one around you. What are you going to do if you don't remember the number? I know like 2 numbers now. And one of them is an old landline that we had at our old house like 15 years ago. Right? So technology has given me those wonderful things, like many of you, but it's also taken something away. That's a trivial example, but it's an obvious one. Every piece of technology will do that for you. And one of the things that technology is giving us is access to all kinds of things, access to information, access to people sometimes, access to all kinds of wonderful things. But one of the things it can take away is a sense that you're ever off. One of the things that Dr. Krieger says in his book, Mystery of Sleep, is that the physiological effects of being on standby or being like on call, the physiological effects of being on call are the exact same as if you were working. And I was so struck by that because most of us don't, we think there are three spaces, working, not working, waiting to work. And what he says is all the research shows that waiting to work is the same on your body as working. So there's some surface reasons for the Pharisees in this passage. The Pharisees were doing what they thought honored God. They were doing what they thought honored God. And it's true there's this giant set of rabbinical commentaries that said, don't do this, do this, this is what work, you know, walking this many paces equals work, you know, all this stuff. What they thought honored God. And so because they, that for them is part of their surface reason, why can't they actually rest? Because they're so worried about upholding all these rules. They're skulking around and seeing where Jesus and the disciples, and they want to have a word about it. So there's some surface reasons that are going to change based on your cultural context and based on your personality and your calling and your work and so on. But there's a deeper reason that I think is common to most of us across time. And that's what it is. It's not the work itself. It's not just the portability of the work or the technology or the fact that we think that we're trying to do good and so on. It's not the work. It's the work under the work. And this is the deep reason why it's hard for many of us to obtain or enjoy rest, is because we can't stop working. Because it's a way that we get a sense of personal significance. It's a way that we get a sense of value. It's a way that we manage our fears. It's a way that we feel important. It's a way we feel a part of a team. It's a way you get stuff done. For many of us, it's not the surface things. It's the work under the work. This incessant labor to prove to yourself or to other people that you're worth it. And so whatever culture you're in or whatever job you're in, whatever the things are, that way that that bubbles up to the surface is going to look different. It's going to be kind of culturally specific or work specific based on what that looks like in your context. But that's the work under the work. Many of us struggle with that. When I was in law school, my first semester, I came in and I thought, I'm not the smartest person here. There are other people who are smarter than me, but I will outwork everyone. And the evidence, in my own mind, for outworking everyone was that I'd be number one in our class after the first semester. And I worked. I worked. And when the grades came out at the end of that first semester, I did well, but I didn't do as well as I wanted. And I was devastated. And in the moment, I remember standing where I remember where I was standing and looking at the grades. This is when they put the grades on the wall. I remember looking at that and just thinking. And what I thought was how unfair things must have been. Because most problems that I've encountered can be solved by working harder. And what happens when you encounter problems that cannot be solved by working harder? Well, if you're like me and you're a little thick-skulled, you just work harder. And so that's what I did. I was just going to work harder. But in hindsight, when I look back on that moment, and I had that very clear memory of where I was standing and how I felt about that, what I realized is the reason why I was so upset is because what I didn't know about myself at the time, the work under the work for me was a need to justify myself, a need to be able to say, wow, you know, this guy, this is what his GPA, this is what his class rank is. He's a pretty solid guy. And because I didn't hit that mark, it just crushed me. And when I told a friend who was a practicing lawyer about what my, when I told that friend about what my, what the results were, I sent him an email. I said, here's what I got. Boom, 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 boom. And then I sent him a whole paragraph about how angry I was about it and so on. Well, he didn't read that second paragraph. He was at work and he just read the initial paragraph and then he had to rush off to home or whatever. And he thought to himself, boy, good job for Ryan. Way to go. And then later that night, he came back and read my second paragraph, and he's like, this guy's unhinged. Like, this guy's totally disconnected from reality. And it's true because I was blinded by the work under the work. But I'm probably the only one in here who's like that. I'm sure I'm the only one in here who's like that. The work under the work. That's why it's difficult for us to obtain that kind of a rest. And that's why many of us will propel ourselves beyond what are our appropriate limits because of the work under the work. The incessant labor to self-justify. So what do we do about that? How do we obtain and enjoy rest? Let me give you one principle, a couple of practices, and the power to do it. First, the principle, the critical kind of umbrella principle that applies to all of our rest and our thinking about rest, whether it's in a particular day or especially as we're talking about it here in a week. Is we'll call it principle of liberation. And that comes out of that Deuteronomy 5 passage. Whether you are able to rest is often a spiritual marker of how enslaved you are to your work. Whether you are able to rest, the ease with which you are able to rest, the ease with which you can unplug and then replug when it's time, the ease that you can make those transitions is often a spiritual marker of how enslaved you are to what it is that you're doing. So when we're talking about rest, that's what we're talking about, being free from being enslaved to good things. I hope you have a good thing that you do, and I hope you like what you do. You should just know that if that's true of you, it's going to be harder to not be enslaved to it. So that's this general principle. Here's a couple of practices when it comes to rest. When you look at rest, the way the scriptures speak about rest, or when you look at some other literature on rest, this is one of the things that I've realized why I didn't like rest when people would talk about it. Because when I think about, I either think about action or inaction. Work or do nothing. That's not fun. And so it's funny when I've talked with people about rest or Sabbath over the years, what I've realized is some people, when they hear Sabbath, what they hear and what they see themselves doing is sitting on a couch looking out a window for a day. Like it just sounds horrible to them, you know? But that's not what we're talking about here. Let me give you some practices here. The first thing is, for some of you are like me, and if it's not on your calendar, it won't get done. Some of you need to put rest on your calendar. Rest is on my calendar, right? You need to put rest on your calendar. You schedule appointments with other people. You got to schedule the appointment with yourself. Sometimes, for some of you. Some of you, I know, don't keep a calendar. I get that. I'm looking at you. I get that. But for some of you, that's what you need to do. Second thing is, you need to balance the way that you engage in rest. Rest is not just inactivity. That's a part of it. But that's one of three. First is worship. The problem with our work is that we're designed. See, work is a pre-fall thing. God created Adam and Eve to work and till the garden. It's a pre-fall thing. It's part of what we're wired to do. We are wired to work. It's just that it got corrupted through the fall. And so what we were supposed to do with work is worship God through our work and through our labor. But what's happened is after the fall, we have come to worship our work. And it's a similar dynamic when it comes to rest. One of the ways that you can see Jesus as the Lord of the Sabbath, part of the idea there is that even in our rest, it's a way that we honor the Lord. It's a way that for example, when you're resting, as part of what you're saying is, I trust that all things are being cared for by the Ancient of Days and are being worked for my good. And the world's not going to fall apart if I unplug for a period of time. So first thing in our rest is about worship. And the next thing in our rest is some of you, if you work with your mind, when you rest, you should rest with your hands. If you work with your hands, when you rest, you should rest with your mind. You need to be doing something that's opposite from whatever it is. It's avocational. It's recreative recreation. It's recreative. It restores you. And sometimes that includes inactivity, but also it includes doing things that are working other pathways and other muscles that you may not otherwise work. And the last piece is inactivity. Some of it does just mean sitting down and doing nothing, talking to somebody, reading a book, whatever, right? So balancing our rest. And the final practice is accountability. There will be seasons where you have to overwork. Something going on in your job, medical school, law school, whatever the thing is, there will be times when you have to overwork. That's just part of the deal. And that's okay if you are accountable to someone else. If you say to the other person, I am conscious of the fact that for this season, I'm overworking. I get it. And I also get it that that can't continue. That it's not a healthy thing for me. It's not a healthy thing for you or whoever else for it to continue. When it's time for that season to conclude, I give you license to tell me that. Say so. I need someone else because I'm conscious of the fact that I'm going to get wrapped up in, or I could get wrapped up in that, and I could become blinded to it later because I love it. Would you help me with that? So for some of us, when we find ourselves in seasons where we just do have to overwork, and that's part of the deal, it has to be seasonal. It can't be the new normal. And one way to help it not be the new normal is to have accountability from the outside. Putting all this stuff into practice, I said we'd give you a principle, three practices, and the power. The way that you think about work, the way that you think about, in particular, rest, what you want to think about is that we're laboring, if the whole issue here, the core of the problem, the core of the way that our work and rest has become corrupted through the fall, is instead of worshiping God through our work and through our rest, now we worship the work. And that's one of the reasons why it's hard to rest, to unplug from the work. One of the key ways that you get the power to carry out this biblical idea of a weekly unplug, of a weekly rest, which includes inactivity and avocational stuff and worship, is that you are laboring, you're actually doing your work from an understanding of your value and significance, not for value and significance. You have applied the gospel to your work itself, and you have applied the gospel to your rest itself. Our value comes not because of our labor. Our value comes not because our significance comes not because of our work. We are valuable and we are significant because we are loved by God, not because of how well or poorly you've done on any of the other things. When that sinks into you, you're actually able to work with greater abandon. Because now you're not getting life and significance from it. You can just love it without having to get to be plugged into it to get this source of significance and value. And you can work hard, but you can also know when to put down your tools. And you can come back to your tools. Because they're not the source of your life and your value and your significance. So you have to learn how to apply the gospel to your work. If we're going to rest well, we've got to be able to unplug from our work. Why is it hard to do that? Because we get so much value and personal significance from our work. And so we have to apply the gospel to our work. Jesus left his Sabbath rest. He left his Sabbath. The idea on the seventh day, God rested. And Jesus left the Sabbath rest to come here to work for you. He left his rest to come and work for you and for me. And so that on the cross, when Jesus says, it is finished, my prayer for you, for myself, if you find yourself now or you find yourself in the future being unable to unplug, what I want you to do is think about your work and the things that you feel like you can't unplug for. And I want you to look at them and say, it is finished. The value and the significance, those, they're finished. And then you're able to pick back up the tools and do the work without getting the source of life and significance and value from those things. It's part of the reason why Jesus came. The Ancient of Days became a baby to grow and to work so that we could rest in a way that honors him and that's consistent with our nature, and also so that we could work and we could enjoy the work without being poisoned by trying to get our value and significance from it. May that be more true in all of our lives this season. Amen.